This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. So grab your needles, pull up a chair. Debbie Stoller is here. Debbie Stoller is the crafting sensation behind the Stitch and Bitch movement. She's offered three books about it, Stitch and Bitch, The Knitter's Handbook, Stitch and Bitch Nation, and now The Happy Hooker. Debbie's in our studio today. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
You also with us, we should point out, are Anne-Marie Michelle and... Anne-Marie, welcome to the program.
Hello.
I've got to look around here. Yeah, there's Anne-Marie. And Michelle Dunham is with us.
Yes, hello.
Welcome to the program. And Wendy Nichols Kimball is also here.
Hi, thank you.
And they will be stitching and complaining. I've had enough of that. I've said it, something like half a dozen times now, but
yeah.
We really haven't told us what it is. Debbie,
tell
us about
it. Keep saying it some more. Stitch and Bitch is a term that goes way back, at least to the 40s. What women came up with as a name for their sewing or knitting or crocheting circles. And in 1999, when I got back into needlecrafts, I wanted to make a circle like that of my own. So I thought Stitch and Bitch was a great name, so I called it that. And then I've written about it in Bust Magazine for a while, which is the magazine that I publish, and then in the books. And I think it's really sort of spurred this huge revival of Stitch and Bitch groups. Across the country.
Let's go around the table. Michelle and Anne-Marie and Wendy, what's your definition? How'd you get into this?
Well, basically, I was looking for an avenue to meet some new people. I'm not from Winston-Salem, so I needed to find a new network of friends to meet and have some similar interests to begin with. So that's kind of what spurred my interest in at least starting the knitting. I was doing crocheting prior to this. So
Michelle, Anne-Marie?
I think it's just a fun way to socialize and... I love seeing what other people are creating, and it's just it's fun to do something that you love doing and to chat with your girlfriends at the same time.
It's great that you brought your knitting with you as well. Wendy, tell us about your idea about Stitch and Bitch. How you
Oh yeah, I feel the same way. I agree. One nice thing about it is having support and help at your fingertips for projects, but also to laugh when you make a mistake and get ideas from each other.
So the interesting thing about this is that you're all reflecting ideas about knitting and gathering that are pretty old. I mean, they go back as far as the textile industry, I guess, for the origins of time. But you've sort of got a new kind of political spin on this.
Well, I do. I mean, I was on this mission ever since I got back into the craft to take back the knit. But I wanted to, which is I really wanted to try to force or encourage, but I feel like force, as many people to knit and crochet and take up fiber arts as possible. Because what I found when I got back into it was that when I would tell people that I was really into knitting, sometimes they wouldn't think that that was really so very feminist of me because they knew me as the editor of this feminist magazine.
Right.
And so I thought about it, and I was like, well, why does knitting and needle arts get such a bad rap? And the only thing I could come up with is that it was because it's something that women have done for hundreds of years. And things that women do are often looked down on by the culture. So I thought, oh, that's not cool. So I wanted to try to, increase knitting and, crocheting and all the fiber arts visibility and increase their value in whatever small way I could. So, knitting in public and starting these groups was part of that.
And if you think about it in terms of consciousness raising, I mean, the value of it is in the networking, is in
I didn't really see it as like a way to get women to business, to network with each other. I just want people, women and men, to realize that these crafts, knitting and crocheting, are wonderful to do, that they require skill and to really value them and not look down on them as something, kind of silly or a waste of time. The thing, though, about these Stitch and Bitch groups, or, people call them a variety of things. They're not all called that. But it's just the same idea of just getting together casually and doing this craft. For me, at least, was when I got into knitting, I just loved it so much that I didn't want to do anything else. I didn't want to go out anymore. I just wanted to sit home. And so if I didn't start a Stitch and Bitch, I basically would have just turned into a complete hermit. I need to find some way to combine socializing with the craft.
Go ahead, Anne-Marie.
I was going to say, it can be very obsessive for some reason. I'm not sure why, but it is.
She's speaking from experience.
So you've got your own support group then. Once you become addicted, then you can also kind of get you've got your 12-step program to get you out of it.
No, you don't want to get out of it. You just get into it deeper. And crocheting can sort of serve as a gateway craft also. You're aware of it.
Once
you get started, you're not going to get out of it. But also, when you get obsessed with something like this, you want to talk about it, and you want to talk about it with people who are going to get it. And if you have you know, non-crafty friends and you start talking about some fabulous new hand-dye yarn that you just bought off the internet, their eyes are going to glaze over. But take that stuff to your Stitch and Bitch and people are going to all want to manhandle it. You know, they're going to grab it right out of your hands to check it out.
Tell me a little bit about, when I read your book, I didn't realize there was such animosity between knitters and crocheters. What's that all about?
I didn't really realize that either. In the book, I say they're like sharks and jets. Yeah. Like, they don't get along. They break into fights in the playground. And I'm a little bit
armed,
like, you know exactly. And I'm a little bit like Maria, you know. I have loyalties in both camps, and I really hope to build some bridges with this latest crochet book. But, yeah, people are you know, some people do both, but I was... which I had always learned, grown up learning all different needle crafts, and I was surprised to learn when my knitting book came out that people really tended to either do one or the other and feel pretty passionate about the one that they did and a little bit, you know, sometimes a little bit disdainful for the one that they didn't do.
Well, what can you describe the difference for me? I mean, what's the difference?
Between the crafts?
Well,
between knitting and crocheting?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good question because I think one mistake that people could sometimes make is thinking that knitting and crocheting are two different ways of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And they aren't. They're two different ways of doing two completely different things. Knitting was invented as a great way to make nice, stretchy fabric that kind of covers tubular body parts, which most of us have quite a few of. And so it's great for sweaters. It's great for socks. And crocheting was invented as a way to sort of recreate lace. Crocheting is actually a pretty recent craft. It's only about 150 years old, maybe a little bit older. And so it's very good at making beautiful, open, airy, lacy, structured fabrics. And it's also kind of good at making architectural things. Like I have there's a cowboy hat pattern in the Happy Hooker book that would drive a knitter to stab themselves in the head with a knitting needle if they tried to make something.
You're crocheting
like
a cowboy hat?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Huh?
It's cool.
Okay. Well, let's get at the bitch part of this. So what goes on? Why don't you know, when you're all together, are you really talking about?
We can't divulge all of our secrets, but we laugh a lot.
The first rule of Stitch and Bitch is never talk about Stitch.
Yes.
Basically, we discuss
thanks for
pretty
listening.
Much all types of issues. So, yeah. I guess it's what's on your mind that particular day at that particular time. So. It could be, you know, a good new restaurant that we ate at or, you know, what's going on in our lives at that particular time or what's going on with the movie stars in Hollywood. So it can cover quite a few different things.
And I think a real interesting thing, and Debbie said it real well, is that knitting is what we have in common. And we absolutely bring in new yarn that we got on the internet and get excited about that. But it overarches our differences, which could be political or career or family or whatnot. But we have that in common, and it's a real unifier.
Mm-hmm.
So do you also, and I'm also interested in the sort of the activity of it. And I'm sort of, when guys get together, it could be around a television set. They're all sort of focused, not on each other, not in a circle, you know, maybe on the TV, and there's stuff going back and forth. If we want to stereotype here, you've got this activity going on. You're all sort of engaged in the same thing, and it's handiwork. Is that important? I mean, can't you just get around and chat and say all these things without the knitting?
Well, first of all, I do want to point out that there are men who also get together to do this. And sometimes there's all men's groups, like there's Stitches and Britches. So men also get together to do that. Women also, of course, get together in other ways. But the thing that's so awesome about doing a needlecraft is that it really helps you listen. It's just, you know, it's fun to do on your own, just in your own house, but it's wonderful to do in a group because it really kind of helps you concentrate and listen and just sort of talk. Even hundreds of years ago when women would do their needlework at night, they would sit around and maybe one of them would read, you know, a chapter from a book and the rest of them would do their needlework. They just, it just like doing needlework and chatting, it goes together like peanut butter and chocolate. It just enhances each other.
Because this is women's work and may not have been well documented over time, because it may not have been taken as seriously as you'd like it to be, is there much lore about in the history of knitting? You talked about knowing that there were women reading and doing other things.
It's hard to find. Another problem with doing the history of any kind of fiber art is that stuff disintegrates on like pottery and stuff like that. So there's a lot of guessing involved. There's a couple of really good books on the subject. It's really fun to learn the history of it. And what I love is that for people who've never done any knitting or crocheting, whenever they come to a Stitch and Bitch group or knitting group to learn and they start, there's always like this light bulb moment where they just go like, wow, I didn't realize this was so hard, or I didn't realize this was so involved. And they instantly kind of get a newfound respect for their grandmothers or great-grandmothers or whoever they knew who did this, because I think a lot of people don't realize that it really is
skilled and that people who are good at it are awesome. I mean, you said it's not your grandma's knitting circle, and that may be true, but it is your grandma's knitting and crocheting. And if you work at it really hard for a long time, you might be lucky enough to become as good as your grandma at any of these skills.
And I guess there's not a lot of new technology. Anne, were you about to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think people realize how many fun and contemporary patterns there are now for knitting and crocheting. I mean, the ones in Debbie's book are wonderful, the crochet patterns. And it just, I remember when somebody said they were going to a knitting party, I was like, oh, that sounds like a good time. And then I went and I started realizing all the interesting things that they have out now to knit. So even though, you know, you think of your grandmother's patterns, there's really some interesting and contemporary things that you can do with knitting and crocheting now.
And there's kind of a do-it-yourself aspect to this, which is new and hip. I mean, that's kind of what's a lot of folks are thinking about.
Well, there's a couple
younger
different
ideas.
The knitting and crocheting has become so huge over the past 5 or 6 years. It's really exciting, and there's anything that becomes that popular, there's always going to be a number of reasons why. You know, one, the reason that's important to me is this idea, this feminist reason of trying to reclaim women's domestic work and sort of put a new spin on it and give it more respect in the culture. But like you said, there are also a lot of young people who feel really uncomfortable about being part of some global corporate culture and just being seen as consumers. And in an effort to sort of break free of that, more and more of them are getting into this DIY movement and learning to make things themselves, and knitting and crocheting is definitely part of that.
And I guess one of the cool things is that the technology really doesn't change much.
No, that's why, you know, it is your grandma's knitting and crocheting, but it's just not her patterns. You know, there's patterns in my books, the Happy Hooker book, for like a hat with an anarchy symbol on it. It's called an anarchy irony hat, and there's
I saw that. What's ironic about that?
Well, that you would crochet an anarchist.
But it is do-it-yourself. Okay, go ahead.
You know, there's a sweater with a skull on it, and there's the cowboy hat. Although, you know, sometimes it is your grandma's patterns, because the woman who designed the cowboy hat for my book is not only a grandma, she's a great-grandma. So maybe it's even a little bit more state-of-mind type of item.
Is there? Yeah.
I was just going to add, I started out crocheting before I started knitting. And one of my problems was that the crochet books that were out really didn't offer a lot of different patterns or different ideas, whereas her book does give you a little bit more of a variety of things to pick from. That's why I just started the knitting, because there's so many knitting books and so many patterns to choose from. So her book is a breath of fresh air, actually.
Thanks. Well, crocheting's been a little bit overlooked over the revival, and so I'm hoping that, you know, my book and other books that are coming out like it can really help people realize what an awesome craft it is, and that it can make more than, you know, granny square afghans in purple, orange, and green, although sometimes those are pretty cool too.
You're going to need a sort of a high fashion show to really showcase this stuff.
Well, I don't know about that, but it, you know, it can make crochet, it can make really beautiful things, and it's just gotten bad PR. It has this bad reputation that's just completely undeserved.
There was also an interesting kind of class conflict over crochet in the early days. You say it's only about 150, 200 years old, which I didn't know.
Yeah, it is the newest, the youngest needlecraft. And when I was researching it, it was really interesting to discover that this bad press that crochet has is actually, it's been sort of fighting this negative image ever since it first came around. It was invented as a way to create these expensive laces that only, you know, wealthy people could afford. And all the servants were sitting around crocheting all the time. And so then the ruling class didn't really like that. So they started going around saying that, you know, crocheting just wasn't as fine a craft as knitting or sewing or embroidery, and that people shouldn't be spending their time doing that, really because they just didn't want the servant class to be wearing as nice things as they were. And crocheting is still fighting that image, weirdly enough.
That kind of an image. Do you have a hard time, you know, getting rid of all the stuff you make? All the lovely stuff you make?
Getting rid of?
Are you kidding? People ask me for more. I've made quite a few baby blankets, and they're always like, I'm ready for another one. She's outgrown that one.
And we often talk about this time of year being when we make things for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Leading up to the holidays, often people will say, oh, are you going to knit me something? Or you like to knit for gifts, but between January and maybe June, you get to do your own project.
We're selfish knitters.
What are you guys making?
I'm actually in the process of crocheting an afghan. Mm-hmm. I've got it here with me, and it's absolutely gorgeous, but mm-hmm. I haven't put the thing together. And again, I've just started the knitting, so I'm actually just doing scarves at this point, but I'll progress eventually.
Gabri, what are you working on?
I'm working on a sweater by Rowan. I'm just working on the sleeve, finishing up the sleeve, and then I got to put it together, which isn't the funnest part, but
beautiful.
That's great. That's yeah, it is. Pretty color, too.
I'm doing socks that mm-hmm. just because they travel so well, and it's easy to take them with you.
And I guess you've got different gauge yarn. Hadn't even thought about that. And different gauge needles. So yes. There is some. Is there any difference when you knit or crochet and when you're doing it alone and in sort of a quiet environment, or if you're sitting in a group? Does it change kind of how you focus on your work?
You know, a lot of crafters have more than one project going at the same time. We often have there's this whole like almost like gangsta lingo among knitters and crocheters, shorthand that they use on blogs and in emails and with each other. One of the favorite phrases is something called a UFO, which is like an unfinished object. Most of us have closets with a number of those going on at the same time. And then you've got a couple of WIPs, which is your like works in progress, things that you're actively working on. I always suggest that you have, like, if you're working on something really complicated and really intricate that requires a lot of counting, that's not the kind of thing you want to bring to your knitting group because it's just going to be too difficult. But so you should have one project like that, and that's good to sit and be quiet and turn off the TV and lock the doors when you're going to work on. And then something else more simple like the socks or, you know, she's working there on a nice big long piece of stockinette stitch where you don't really have to think about it.
So there is a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Being a new knitter, Anne Marie and Wendy have helped me quite often when I've made a mistake, because when you're just learning, you don't know how to actually fix that mistake. So it's nice to be around people that are a little bit more advanced than you.
And you may be 40 or 50 rows into the project before you know you made the mistake.
And that is true.
And if you bring a difficult project and then you end up in a really good discussion, you may leave with less than you came with, which is okay, too. You've had a good time.
Started with socks, ended with an Afghan.
Right.
Great conversation, though. Now, I realize right now, watching you knit, that if I were ever to take this up, I would take my first pair of mittens, figure out how long it took me to make that. Then the second pair I'd want to do like in half the time. And the third pair, I'd want to keep cutting the time. So for me, no matter how it began, it would become a competitive event. Is there a competitive
with yourself or with other?
Me.
You'd have to be faster than.
Then if I got in the room, of course, then I'd have to like get my mittens done before you were even at the thumb.
I don't think you'd be able to do that.
I couldn't do it, right?
No, I think I could totally knit you under the table no matter what.
Oh, yeah?
We're going to have a knit-off.
Yeah? You want a piece of this?
Bring them out. Here. Bring them out right now. Bring it on.
I got a pair of needles. These are actually imported needles.
Let's see it.
So does it get competitive?
I don't know if it necessarily gets, well, sure. I mean, sometimes it can. I mean, I think different people bring different desires to it. Personally, I love seeing myself get better and better and better at seeing my skills progress. That's really fun. You know, when you first start a sweater made on giant needles with really thick yarn, you feel really proud of because you actually finished a sweater. And then later on, you know, for me, I like things to get more and more and more complicated. Other people aren't into it for really skill building at all. For them, it's more a creative and artistic outlet, and they're more about like figuring out designs. And I don't know what you guys think. I mean, I happen to like that I can knit very fast.
I would say absolutely. My experience with knitting groups has been non-competitive and extremely supportive. There's this energy about wanting to teach and wanting to share, which maybe goes back to the feminism piece. It doesn't happen among women maybe as much as it should.
I think you're maybe more like, just competing against yourself.
Yeah.
Like to see yourself.
Come up with a better product or more complicated. Is there room for much improvisation once you begin working on something with a pattern?
That's all I actually do because I can't read the patterns very well. So I follow Wendy and Anne Marie. I actually steal some of their ideas off of different things. Anne Marie was making a baby Afghan, and I stole that and made one, but with a larger crochet hook and stuff. So I kind of made it my own, call it my own. Mm-hmm.
So once you get to know what you're doing, you can come up with your own couple of stitches, add your own design.
Yeah, well, the basics are there. It's always fun to sort of try to invent your own systems for doing things, or you can always change the colors of a pattern. I mean, there's plenty of room for invention.
Debbie Stoller, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
Debbie Stoller is the author of The Happy Hooker. She'll be crocheting at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh at 1:30 this afternoon, at Market Street Books and Maps in Chapel Hill at 6. And I want to thank you also, Anne Marie Gilchrist, Michelle Dunham, and Wendy Nichols Kimball. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
And the lovely socks, they fit, actually. They're pretty nice. Thank you very much. And did I say you're going to be at Quail Ridge at 1:30, Market Street at 6 p.m.? There's more in our program. Stay with us. Gypsy Rock coming up on The State of Things. Stay with us.